Hello, everyone. Welcome to another brand new episode of the Long Coop Mafia Podcast. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's frontman and main host. That's right, I'm running solo today. And just a couple of things before we get into the main meat and potatoes of the show. You'll notice that the audio quality will be kind of better. I'm not knocking the last three episodes that we've had. It's just that I like to provide, when we are at a convention, the basic stuff that we've gotten at the convention, meaning the panel that we did, the Power Rangers panel, which I hope you guys and gals enjoyed, the interview with David Nickel that we had, which was our second interview, and or I should say our second episode in our Four State Trilogy, that was this September, even though we did give I gave a little bit of a review afterwards, and our final episode, which was this past week, which was our live, quote-unquote, live recording at the show. Hopefully, if we get a chance to do another recording at a four-state event or at a major convention, if we have lucky enough to gather enough funds to do such a thing, that we'll be able to record it so we sound a little bit better. But to kind of move on from that, I hope you enjoyed those shows. And because it's still, as I'm recording this, October the 1st, start of October. Yesterday, that means yesterday, Saturday, was September 30th, and it was International Podcast Day, and we at the show hope you not only listened to our show over the course of the week, found some other unique and interesting podcasts to listen to. It's one of the things that we tend to do, or at least I tend to do on Twitter, is share a couple of different podcasts, so you have other listening material to listen to on the way to work, while you exercise, so forth and so on. That way, you have a wide variety of independent podcasts like ours instead of the more mainstream. There's nothing wrong with more of the mainstream stream podcasts out there like Nerdist and Joe Rogan and so forth and so on. Just that you have some of the smaller guys and gals out there to listen to. Now, to get into, again, the meat and potatoes of the show, I just got back in tonight from watching the 2017 version of Stephen King's It. Granted, we found out, I know I'm a little bit late on this, and there's a lot of things to break down. As much as I want to pause this and watch the final episode of Rick and Morty through the live stream on Adult Swim, when I went to log in on the website, it was lagging so damn bad because everybody's trying to watch it. I'll do what I normally do and watch it on Monday before I head out to volunteer. But back to Stephen King's It. It's kind of odd to see the movie take place in kind of the 80s, whereas in the book form, I know I'm nitpicking here, because in the book it kind of took place in the 60s, and it ended up in the 80s, but it's kind of, they moved it up. Do I have an issue with it? Nothing beats Tim Curry's version of Pennywise the Clown. I hold that rendition in such high regard because of how he kind of, the kind of actor that he is. Not saying that this current actor that plays Pennywise wasn't the same or that he didn't try. It's kind of trying to compare Leto's Joker with the two prior people who played the Joker. It's night and day. The actor gave his all to play Pennywise. I'm not knocking that. Just that it was a decent movie. It was a good movie. I do recommend watching it. And if it's still in the theaters, watching in the theaters. Do I think that you should own it? Good chance, because there should be a lot of Easter eggs that I missed in this movie that I could be able to pick up in the video. Didn't have that ability, but it's kind of hard to say and all that. I do want to watch it again, so I do recommend you at least renting it when it does come out on video on demand or at a Redbox somewhere. I'm not saying it's a rental strictly. It's one of the few better movies that kind of lived up to the hype this past summer. But one of the things that I did hate is the aspect of the... For a lot of the people out there who love horror and listen to this podcast, the few of you that do, please let me know if you feel the same way by emailing us or at longcoatmafia@gmail.com or messaging us on Facebook at our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thelongcoatmafiapodcast, and letting us know. And that is the fact that when you watch a horror movie such as Stephen King's It or any other horror movie in theaters, having to deal in some way the narcissistic sociopath fucktards that sit either in front of you or behind you. And the reason why I call them the narcissistic sociopathic fucktards is because these are the folks that no matter what goes on the screen, it's a horror movie. It's even though I am kind of non-reactive to what's going on the screen, but these are the people that have to point, laugh, joke about what's going on. They're treating the movie that it's not a horror, it's a comedy. It's like watching a Cat Williams stand-up special or a Joe Rogan special or Jim Norton special. They're treating it like they're watching a stand-up special and they got to laugh at every freaking thing that's said. Granted, Stephen King, the movie had a few lighthearted instances in it. There were several instances where you should have said, people would have been like, if I overheard the people that were constantly chatting behind me, oh my god, that's fucked up, in reference to a lot of the scenes involving the character Beth, I think, if I remember correctly, the name. Hold on a second, I'll get right back to you in regards to that. Sorry, I was wrong. It's not Beth, it's Beverly. Basically, in the book, a lot of the characters that you see on the screen do mirror the actions or what does go on in the book in regards to the main plot points in the book. And with Beverly's character is that she is kind of outcast, despite the fact that all the kids in this are, in essence, outcasts and classified as quote-unquote losers, whereas the main character, I won't say the main character, normally in this version it's Ben. Where in, I think, the book and the original miniseries, it was Mike. Where Mike in the miniseries and the book, Mike was the kind of the prelude to the town lore and what happened in the past of the town. In this movie, it's in essence Ben, which was in the kind of the architect in the miniseries, but. With Bev's character, that she was pretty much lived in a very abusive household. The mother was not around. The father was very, very, very restrictive and borderline, very wanting to be. It was hinted at in the book as well as the movie that it was the relationship between her and her father. Her father was borderline sexually abusive. It never happened in the book or in the movie, but it was kind of leaned that way in reference to the father's actions, in reference to how abusive he was and borderline almost sexually abusive he was. In regards to that, whereas most of the women, the two sociopathic, narcissistic fucktards that were behind me, who were women, who were laughing the whole goddamn time throughout the movie, and instead of saying, hearing them go, oh, that's fucked up, you know, they were laughing even more at sexual goddamn assault. That, as much as I am quasi for women's right in an aspect. I don't like the aspect of sexual assault. Instead of, you know, how dare they? Why does, if I heard the aspect of, like, why doesn't she get help, or why doesn't she do something in regards to that, or when, spoilers, she winds up using the toilet bowl, the back part of the cover that goes on the back part of the toilet bowl, and smashes it into her father's head, knocking him out. I think he knocked him out, or it could have been, she could have killed him for all that, for all what it was worth. But instead of cheering the fact that she wanted to escape this situation and that life, they were treating it like a fucking joke. It's not a fucking joke. It's kind of a serious thing. And this is how a lot of the youth is seeing this and treating it like such. And a lot of people are wondering what's going on. But then again, a lot of people are treating horror as a legitimate comedy. Even though there are horror movies that have comedic elements, like John Johnson's Skeleton Key, which is very comedic in and upon itself. It's a parody of the horror genre. But again, John Johnson does put out a lot of serious, decent, good horror movies. I'm just using an example from this review. I do have a copy of his movie called The Jester, which I still have yet to watch, that I got at the little bit of a fundraiser / horror show that was to help Mel Heflin, which she's been a real treat and to meet and so forth and so on. I might want to try to get her on another again for an interview in reference to the movie she's working on. I think it is Back Creek or something like that. Either way, with this, it kind of, they took liberties in reference to what happens in the book. They changed it up. I think the sequel, because it has earned so much money over the course of the several weeks, it's one of the reasons why we didn't review this movie or see it sooner, is because of the so many verbal contractual obligations that we had with Forestate trying to get it out. Let's see here. Stephen King's It. Well, a lot of new movies come. I'm looking at box office results. It's still at number one in the box office, and this is from September 29th through October 1st. It's not currently updated because the results for today are not in yet, but as of right now, it's still number one with weekend gross of $17 million. It's down 41% change, which, from what I'm told, is a very good thing. Even though it's week four, it's still a very good amount change. Apparently, the budget was $35 million. It has total grossed of $291 million and change. Let's say $291 million U.S. box office for the week. If you cut that in half, it's around about $150 million, which it definitely made its money back with marketing costs and production costs. And the reason why I say cut it in half, again, try to reiterate that the numbers that you were given through a lot of these news outlets like Entertainment Tonight, E! News, they'll give you the $300 million total gross, but they won't say, yeah, they'll say, yes, it's for a $35 million movie, it's a box blockbuster. What they neglect to tell you, that theaters have, that's before the theaters take their cut. And that's roughly about, on average, half that total. And with marketing, if you have something that's $35 million, there could be anywhere between another $100 million to $200 million. On top of that, that's strictly marketing. So if we're going by the baseline of that cut in half, that brings it to $150 million. And if it, because I am without cable TV, I didn't see too much trailers in regards to online for this movie, or when I did have access to cable, seeing trailers on TV for this movie, so therefore the marketing might have been low in my particular market, television wise, in reference to getting the news out there. So low end, yes, it's a blockbuster, it made some money, so that's very good for, I think Warner Brothers put it out. They are in the works for a sequel, which might come out in 2019, I believe it is. So, all in all, I'm going to give this movie a 6.5 out of 10, which is pretty decent. It did a better job trying to convey the story than Dark Tower did, which kind of tossed the whole convoluted Dark Tower storyline in a blender, hit puree, and poured it out in a glass for us. Or this, they tried to just convey the baseline of the story, and they did that. One of the things that they kind of cut out from the book, and I completely understand why, because they were teenage, in essence, in the book, teenagers, like in this movie. They had a kind of a coming of age instance in the book, whereas they kind of had a problem in reference to that, and what brought them together was Beverly having a teenage romance, her first experience, I'm going to put it like that, to kind of bond them all together. In this, they didn't convey that, but it, one of the things that kind of crossed over from the book to the movie, that they kind of moved together and cross-faded, was the fact that she was the young woman in the group that everybody kind of had a crush on, and it was well done, I'll say that, and there was nothing to gripe about, or nothing big. I think the biggest complaint I heard in regards to Stephen King's It was in regards to Pennywise. Other than that, nothing too bad. To kind of move on to the aspect of the controversial part of this week's show is the aspect of here. I know my co-host who always listens to my shows and gives me a critique when we kind of meet up or we talk in some way, he's going to start to cringe. As of this recording, because I want to keep some of the topics somewhat relevant and not give you guys a complete review episode as always. This past week on Wednesday, aka Hump Day of all things, Hugh Hefner passed away. For those of you who are not familiar with who, living under that rock and not familiar with Hugh Hefner, over the past God knows how many years of your life, consider yourself lucky. But Hugh Hefner was the founder of Playboy magazine. And what Play, again, if you were living under that same rock and not familiar with what Playboy was or is, Playboy was, in essence, this is this magazine where, along with interviews, short stories, and general advice on adult matters, there were pictorials involving women in either A, next to nothing, or nothing at all. This magazine, I think, was premiered in the late 50s, mid to late 50s, early 60s, with a few thousand dollars and a dream. but it's a big multi-million dollar empire today with its own channel. Religious morals aside, let's put that aside for right now, because a lot of religious organizations have their moral ethnic dilemma in regards to what Playboy in essence is in regards to pornography. But a lot of people have been, as of recently, been very outraged at the passing, not so much at the passing of Playboy, but as of the aspect of the passing of Hugh Hefner and his business practices back in the day, in reference to Marilyn Monroe, in which he has a funeral plot right next to that he paid close to $80,000 for. And it's his money. He's allowed to do with it what he pleases. That's his deal. And a lot of people are pissed off that he has a funeral plot next to Marilyn Monroe, whom some say he had a crush on. But the initial outrage was that through the various means and stories from back in the day, that Marilyn Monroe had a gripe in regards to Hugh Hefner publishing the infamous photos that she had done, and thus she claimed it ruined her career. This is despite her having a affair with several members of the Kennedy family, namely John and his brother, and could have possibly had some, depending on who you talk to, a degree in how south her career went, along with her possible drug or alleged drug problem and whom she had other ties to. Now, to kind of go into a little bit my viewpoint in reference to the main issue with this, for those who take photos, for those of you who made it this far in the podcast, I'm asking for your input to please email us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com or message us on Facebook, on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast, and message us so I could get the proper legal ease in this, because a lot of people saying, how dare she, because the main thing was she, Marilyn Monroe said, Hugh Hefner did not have her consent in regards to publishing those photos. Now, here is where I'm going to insert my two cents, and I want those who have done tasteful photos that were in the nude or tastefully, you know, along those lines, who have modeled that way, in lingerie or in fully nude or something like that, who take photos, period, with models of any sort, please email me the legal ease, because I'm going to try to do my best to try to explain the best way I can. So, if I'm wrong, please, you know, those who model and those who take photos, email me, because they're the one, in my mind, in my mindset, are the ones who are best able to explain the goings on behind the scenes than someone who is possibly up in arms over something that they know nothing about. And even though it's me trying to explain from what I heard from few people who have done this, that's why I want clarification in regards to if I'm wrong, how I'm wrong, by those who actually do the business. And my opinion is that when the possibility of when Hugh was starting up Playboy, and he heard about these photos through whatever grapevine he was associated with, and he spoke to this photographer and acquired those photos, those films. Now, here's where I may be wrong, and I want clarification. When a photographer, male or female, is taking photos, they have full control and full copyright what happens to those photos. Which means if someone like Hugh Hefner or any publication comes up to that photographer, they can strike a deal over that set of photos, whether it be of a model or a bowl of fruits or a bunch of cars, so forth and so on. That photographer owns those photos and the copyright on those photos. Now, the person in question in this instance, Marilyn Monroe, if she signed a contract with the photographer stating that the photographer can only print and sell the photos in a gallery setting, meaning because most photographers or professional photographers might sell their works in a gallery setting similar to that of a painting artist. I'll put it like that instead of a photography artist. Therefore, that's the only way that they could, you know, sell their photos. That is one strict aspect of settling privacy in regards to model and photographer. If nothing is stated between model and photographer, therefore, in reference to, meaning if I'm taking photos as a professional photographer, if the person I'm taking photos of does not sign an agreement in regards to what I do with those photos, they're mine. They're completely mine to do as I please. If I choose to sell them to a publication, that's my right. I own the negatives. I own the copyright. I can put them out as whatever I please. Now, if the model that I work with signed an agreement that I could only do it in a gallery setting, I cannot put her photo, her image on mugs, t-shirt, posters, or sell them to a internet company or a magazine for distribution. Therefore, if I go behind her back and sell her photos to a publication like Playboy, then she has a legal right to come after me and sue me in regards to publishing those photos or selling them to a publication like Playboy. Now, since we don't know the contractual obligation, therefore, Marilyn Monroe, because of certain instances where I think the person, one of the people she was dating at the time, was very jealous, she could have just tried to back out of, hey, I didn't know, I didn't give my consent. Now, what I'm getting at is that because she might have consent to do those photos, depending on what kind of contract she had with the photographer, as far as I know and I am concerned with, in my opinion, she had no say in regards to what happened to those photos. If in the contract between her and the photographer, she had that clause written in that she had say, and the photographer did not, then that's a completely different story. I'll open it up. I want to hear some of your all thoughts about this, especially those who do photograph models and those who have modeled in the past. Now, to kind of move on to something a little bit more brighter, as you heard in the live 4-State Con recording, I did give a kind of a half-assed review on Destiny 2, to be more specific. And I think I told you guys and gals that I hadn't played the game fully through yet, and I wanted a chance to play the game through and give you all of you my final thoughts once I did so. Let me say this. I am kind of, both pleased and very disappointed in Destiny 2. Especially some of the Rockstar, for that matter, and their handling of the tab codes. First, let's talk about Rockstar and their tab codes. Granted, the codes are that I'm going to give out, or at least tell you about, are overly just examples and simplistic. That my experience with Rockstar and their codes and handling the codes is pathetic. I haven't, in the time that I've been playing Destiny 2, and had a chance to enter in codes to the website, I haven't been able to do so, because out of 7 tabs, 8, because I haven't opened up one particular can yet and made the attempt to enter in said code, out of the tabs that I have acquired and made the attempt to enter in, only 3 have worked. Literally, less than half the codes that I have entered in at the designated website have worked. And basically, I could literally go to Walmart, go to 7-Eleven, go to any other local Minute Mart, get a Destiny 2 can of Rockstar, bring that can home within, let's say, 10 minutes, fire up my computer, fire up that particular website, pop the tab to reveal the code, enter in the code, which could be 12345, and get one of the 2 common responses from that website. The first one being, the code you have entered is invalid. It is clear my code is 12345. How is this code invalid? The website does not know. Or you get the other possible error message saying, this code has already been entered. Meaning, somebody entered in that particular code of a can I just opened up. Which, like I said, if I just opened up that can, fired up the website, and typed in 1235, the code on the tab, how did somebody else enter it in? Now, that, and they tell you, if you have issues with this code, or the code on your can, please take a picture of the code that with the tab still attached to the can, and send it to us via our website. Now, the only way, if you actually take a photo of this tab with the code using your smartphone. Now, granted, all I have is a basic $50 smartphone. You're not reading any code off that tab whatsoever, unless you take the tab off and fiddle with that phone to get a clear shot of what's written on that tab. So, turning in tab codes from Rockstar Energy Drinks are, in essence, pointless, even though you do get a few unique items or common items. Now, overall, as I stated in my review in regards to Destiny 2, a lot of things have been done easier. You could, in essence, play the game within about, or the baseline story, within about a week, if not less than, like 2 or 3 days, maybe about an hour to a day. And once everything you're done, you're given other side missions that help with the story, plus and more advanced and higher level missions that you could do solo or with a friend on your friends list. Plus, there's little nooks and crannies you could go into to fight stronger enemies and get better loot. But one of the things I found out, or have found out for playing Destiny 2 over the course of the month, is that there's nobody on the servers I'm at. Literally, there is nobody. It's like a ghost town. And yet, if I go into the people who play Destiny on YouTube, they are hundreds upon hundreds of people on the several planets playing public events, playing strikes, playing the Crucible, especially public events. My service, literally a ghost town. Nobody's playing public events. Now, how am I supposed to grind for better loot at public events when I'm the only sucker playing? Makes me not want to play. Now, the other issue that I've been having with this is the aspect of being not so much multiplayer, but the aspect of being put into a game that doesn't have that many players to begin with. Meaning, see, if I go into the Crucible, or which is the player versus player, which I'll get to in a second, it puts me in, if there's seven other people and they're looking for one other person, or if somebody rage quits in a match and they need somebody to fill a spot, I get to fill in a spot. The thing is, with the raid, which I haven't touched yet, there is not that. There is no, let's put this single person in a match with five people. Or, let's find five other people for this person. The same thing goes with their nightfall. Now, with the regular strike, I could be put into a match with two other people, or choose to do a strike with two other friends. But with Nightfall, I have to find two other friends that have Destiny 2, to do Nightfall. There is no, let's find two other motherfuckers to play with you. Granted, there is a beta aspect to the game that will allow you to find people to, or say, hey, I'm just a single person, can I find two other people or five other people to do the raid? No, it should have been included in the game. It's not this beta bullshit, or the fact that one of the other things that I found out that I agree with is that when you go into one of the social aspects of the game, whether it's the farm. Let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about the Crucible for one thing, which is the player versus player. You have the competitive and the quick play, which Destiny, or I say the folks at either Activision or Bungie, should have just called it quick play and quick play 2. That's it. Because I can understand having general quick play. Just drop in the match, dust off your hands, and go at it. The competitive is basically quick play. That's it. That you can't choose just deathmatch. You can't just choose a free-for-all or a dominion type capture the flag or anything. It's basically quick play. That's all it is. That is strictly all it is. It's another version of quick play. Just competitive. Can't choose. It's just competitive. What the fuck? Where you have other player versus player aspects or other games that, let's take Grand Theft Auto 5. Even though I didn't really like the multiplayer aspect of Grand Theft Auto 5, with their competitive player versus player matchups, i.e. free-for-all, dominion, racing, and capture the flag, that was always a choice for those particular matchups. The same thing goes with Battlefield, same thing goes with Call of Duty, the same thing goes with Halo. Destiny, it's, let's bend you over as a player, take this pineapple and shove it up your ass when it comes to that. The same thing when it comes to the other aspects of it. Now let's talk about the social spaces. There's no open talk in these social spaces. you could dance around, you could do these emotes, but to ask other players in regards to getting other people for this, or see if you could get other people in these, say, hey, why don't we do, you know, let's, come on, we're here standing around, acting like we're trying to play this game with a Guitar Hero controller, let's hit up a raid, or let's hit up a Nightfall. You can't. You could just dance around, or point at people using emotes, and look like a fucking idiot. Another problem I've had, which a lot of people have said the same thing I did when I first started playing with the first Destiny, and that is the exotics. Yes, now the stuff that drops are more often, the exotics are higher rate, and a lot of it's more fun and easier to do and easier to acquire. Just that you're still limited to one exotic weapon and one exotic armor piece. The fuck? Literally, the fuck? It's like you have three basic weapon sets. A primary, a secondary, and a heavy. Which basically, if you wanted your primary to be a handgun, the second one an automatic rifle, and your heavy being a rocket launcher, you're only allowed in one of those spots an exotic weapon. Not all three. People have been bitching about this since the first one, and the people that love Destiny have been bitching about this, and critical of Destiny have been bitching about this since the first one. Did they fix this? No. The same thing goes with the armor. You have five armor slots. The helmet, the torso, the arms or the gauntlets, the legs or the boots, and the cape. You're only allowed one exotic in this section. That's it. One. The fuck? If I have five exotics, all at a 270, 280, or 290, 300 power set, why not give me the chance to put all five in that armor slot, in those armor slots, or all three in those weapon slots? Let me do it. And another thing that Destiny seemed to ignore from the players is trading. We'll give you higher drop rates, better weapons, easier campaign, better crucible, better strikes, but fuck you in reference to trading. We can't do that. Come on. You're selling this as almost an open world MMO type of ordeal. And you're not even doing that. Or allowing trading. Now, spoilers. Once you beat the game, a new version of the tower opens up. Which means you go from the farm, all the NPCs that were in the farm, then go to the tower. Which leaves the farm pretty much empty. Empty! There are no NPCs there. At least put a couple of people in there to sell shit. At least put an Eververse person there to sell. Put the main person for the Eververse, who is voiced by Claudia Black, by the way, in the tower. Put someone else at the farm. Put someone else who could decode the engrams in the farm. Put another somebody else that could sell shit at the farm. But do they do this? No. It's empty. Empty. Oh, farm has soccer that you can play all day long. What's the point? There's a ball in the tower everybody can freaking kick around. There are secrets in the tower you can explore and do and so forth and so on. But Bungie and Activision have, with these problems, and they're already talking about nerfing weapons, have told people, in essence, you can go fuck yourself. We're going to do what we want. And as you heard in our initial review, the shaders, which can be used infinite number of times in the original Destiny, are now one-time use. And if you use them and you find something better, so sorry, Chari. You can't use that shader anymore. But you could grind for that shader again, or hopefully find it in an engram you pay for. No, that's not what the fans bitched about, and people have come out from either Activision or Bungie saying, well, we did it so you guys could have more fun. And the fans have stated, go fuck yourself. In reference, you told us in regards to that, go fuck yourself. Well, you too can go fuck yourself. And this is supposed to be one of the games that I picked up so I could play more with my friends who literally love Destiny 2. And what are they doing? After about a week of playing it or going through the grind of it, they're not playing anymore. Half my list on Xbox One, the console, no one's playing Destiny. I think out of the 20, 30 people that are on my list, 20 people are in the combination of YouTube, Hulu, and or Netflix. And the remaining 10 are either offline or playing games on the 360 or playing games I don't have on my Xbox One or have installed on my Xbox One. Now, which kind of sucks, because most of these people were my same people that were complaining that I watched too much YouTube, too much Netflix, too much Hulu, and they couldn't wait for Destiny 2 to come out so we could all play together. They're not, because they're bored with it already. And if they are playing it, it's either when I'm at my 9-to-5, or they're playing it where I'm out and about and I'm at home to play it. What else? Another, to get off this kind of pitiful rant, that is, in fact, pitiful, because I will say this, my rating for this, my honest-to-God rating for Destiny 2 is a Nathan Fillion out of 10, because his Cade character is the best this game has to offer. That is, he has the best lines, Cade is the best character ever. So therefore, the game is getting a Cade out of 10, period. But if you want something to general pick on, wait until you can get this game for $30 used. Because right now, you're not going to see too many people playing this game until the DLC comes out in December. The other gripe I have with this is the aspect of the clans. I don't mean something that's racially motivated. In gaming, there is something that is called clans. It's just a group of people that like to play together for one reason or another. And you can build, in Destiny, it's rewarded. They decided to reward clans that primarily do Nightfalls and Crucibles and Raids and so forth and so on. Therefore, if you're part of a clan and a good chunk of your clan does a raid, you could share a reward, which is a good idea. But you'd think, oh, I'm going to do a strike, a Nightfall, or with my buddy who might be part of a different clan, or a few Crucibles. I could earn something for the clan. It hasn't shown up yet. Turns out, in order to earn that reward for the rest of your clan, more than four people have to be in your, like 3 to 5 people, have to be in your fire team playing that particular aspect of the game in order to earn the rest of your clan that special prize. And it also leads me to another thing. This is Destiny 2. Another thing that a lot of people would have loved is to hit past that number 3. To have like 4 or 5 people doing a strike. or four or five people gathered together to do the storyline. That's a no. You get five people to do the raid, but three people to do a strike. The hell. The hell. And one of my other gripes that I had with Destiny 1 was the aspect of going to a section, being limited to do a limited spawning, which is that if you die, if you're with a group of three or more people, or group of three on your fire team, your respawn, is, instead of being 5 seconds, it goes up to 30. But if you're doing it yourself, you are kicked back, in some cases, to the start of that area. Which means if you're in a restricted spawning zone, in some cases, there's no checkpoints. And if you're right near the end and die, you're sent back to the beginning of that respawn, restricted spawn zone. Which can be a pain in the goddamn ass. Because if you have a shit ton of tough enemies that are bullet sponges, what the fuck are you going to do? You're the only one playing this. And if you're the only son of a bitch who has that game on your friends list, then you're screwed. No one's going to help you. Because a lot of times you have people that, the rare occasions that you have people on that planet, they're not going to follow you to do a mission. They're not part of your fire team. They're there, they're probably doing their own mission. Or they're probably waiting on somebody to help them with a public event, which will never happen. But on the bright side, at least, you could find Xur this time, because they put a marker on the planet. He's there for that particular weekend. You don't have to Google search, where is Xur this week? You could find him. And the bright side is, his wares are easily gotten. But, rumor has it nowadays that a lot of, again, we have a lot of great weapons in Destiny 2. A lot of easily gotten stuff in Destiny 2. The cold heart bonus pre-order weapon is a great weapon. It's a nice weapon you get at the end of the game. It's easily upgradable to a higher level. But from what I hear, starting next week, Bungie and Activision are going to start nerfing weapons again. So what's the point of a casual player playing Destiny 2 when they're going to start nerfing weapons? Because, oh, these players like this weapon in Crucible. These players like this particular weapon in Strikes. These particular people like this particular weapon in the Raid. Oh, we can't have that. Let's nerf all the weapons. And therefore, people get pissed. Because some other people got pissed at somebody got too many headshots in the game. But again, I tried to move out from that stupid rant. I found out recently that this particular month, they have to vote on it, but it looks like it has gone through. The voice actor strike in reference to video games has come to an end, meaning that they, to kind of explain a little bit, you heard me talk about this with Michelle Knotts way back last year. Please go to our website, thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. It's one of our December episodes last year when we spoke to Michelle Knotts, who voices Jesse from the Pokemon series. We touched the base on that. Basically, to summarize, a lot of your favorite voice actors and actresses that are out there were protesting the video game genre of voice acting. Which means when they voice something like Rick and Morty or Futurama or Adventure Time, they get royalties. They get something a little bit on the kind of the back end, meaning that once if it airs on their initial contract with like TV and movies and so forth, they tend to get something on the back end. And nowadays they're getting something in regards to stuff like Netflix and Hulu and other streaming services, especially like Amazon, that they usually get something on the back end, in regards to royalties and stuff to kind of help fund and pay their medical bills if they lose their voice for a couple of days. And if they do lose their voice, they're out of, these people are out of work. Literally, they're out of work. And they, when they are approached by some, a place like Take Two or Bungie or Activision or, you know, a whomever is doing particular games, the big developers, the AAA developers, they usually like, hey, we'll pay you $100,000, we'll pay you $30,000, or whatever the amount is, depending on the voice actor or actress, or in regards to the job. They have to spend several, this is a one-time fee, whereas someone who might work on The Simpsons or Rick and Morty, they're getting a per-episode fee, which means every episode, they let's say they get $15,000-$20,000. Yes, in some cases, this is a low-ball number, whereas in regards to The Simpsons, they're getting $100,000 an episode. But I'm just using $10,000 as a type of baseline. For like Rick and Morty or Adventure Time or something like that, they get $10,000 an episode, and every time that episode gets re-aired on TV, there's DVDs. They usually get a maybe like a couple of bucks, or you know, every time it gets re-aired, and that they do have time off to recoup their voices and so forth and so on. And if they hurt their voices, they can't hurt their voices between one episode recording and the next, because if they do, they can't record the episode and they can't, you know, go on. And with voice acting for games where they have to grunt, growl, scream, in a lot of cases, that could hurt their vocal cords. And if they have to go immediately after that recording or the next day back to work, it hurts their job. It literally hurts their job. And they can't do it. And they can't make the proper voices for that show that makes that show special to you. And the, let's say the a person is approached by Take Two, they have to, there's no, first off, there's no back-end deal, which means if a game like, again, like Grand Theft Auto 5, where one of the voice actors for that game was only paid, was paid $100,000 for their work, and the game made several billion dollars over its run, and he saw nothing on the back end. He would have loved to see a couple of bucks off the back end after it hit so many sales. And that's one of the things that they were looking in, into getting. It looks like they will be getting that. And another thing that a lot of the voice actors have gotten part of the deal is, again, the extra funds for medical and other bills. Another thing is clarification, or the company has to be clear in regards to what is going to be said in that particular script, which means if there's a lot of profanity that needs to be said, the company has to be upfront, especially if there's going to be any type of racial slurs like there was or is in Grand Theft Auto. They might not want to say that or say too many of those racial slurs or words that might be profane. So if they don't want to say fuck, shit, motherfucker, they don't want to say that, the company has to be up front that says, hey, there's going to be a lot of curse words in this. They have more negotiation rights with the voice actor now. The voice actors have more negotiation rights in regards to what they can or will do in regards to the game. They have more say, which is good. It's great for you, great for them. Unfortunately, we won't, because this strike and these issues happened in 2014, late 2014, early 2015, and since a lot of games take a while to develop, we haven't seen any ill effects right now with the games that are currently coming out. We might see some finicky type of games later on down the road, or games that seem to not be too well voiced down the road, but it'll take some time before everything gets caught up. But the strike for now seems over. We'll hopefully, if I get a chance to talk to another voice actor, I didn't get a chance to talk to one. I had a chance to talk to one this past Four State. I didn't get a chance to talk to him. I wish I did. It was the person who voiced Frylock from Aqua Teen Hunger Force, but I wish I got a chance to talk to him. But hopefully, from the looks of things and the sounds of things, there might be another one or two voice actors coming up in the next Four State. I don't know. I do have a word who might be at next Four State in reference to one. One person has been confirmed. Once one or two more people have been dropped, name dropped, and contract signed and officially announced in regards to Four State, March's Four State Comic Con, I will be happy to announce those as well. So, and hopefully I'll have another couple interviews for you guys in regards to that if I'm able to get up there. Hopefully, my co-host Big Candy will be able to go up there, up in March in Hagerstown, and we'll get a couple interviews if I have to bug him, get his. It all depends. I'll twist a few arms, and see who's who and what's what, and what I can do and who I can snag interview wise. Rumor has it. Let me put it like this. Matt has teased, who's the promoter of Four State Comic Con, who puts on it's kind of hard to say a great show, but he puts on a very good show. Damn near close to a great show as you can get. A lot of great, I'll say for a small show, it is a great show. Matt does a hell of a job. He is a workhorse when it comes to Four State. He has teased me and everybody saying that there will be somebody from the Troma family at next year's Four State. He's in talks. I don't know who it is. I honestly, normally Matt tells me way in advance who he has signed for it. He says he's in talks. I gave my guess because both of us know the same person. Him a little bit more personally than I do because he has dealings with her. Not on a personal level, on a professional level. And he said I was wrong. It's someone, he said nothing against her, but it's someone a little bit bigger than her. And I'm hoping it's the man himself. Mr. The One. The only world director. I'm hoping it's Lloyd Kaufman himself, but I seriously doubt it. I would shit my pants at home in our safe house if he says it's Lloyd Kaufman. But for right now, until I get the official word, I could only guess. It could be any number of people that have worked in the Troma family, and the Troma family is very extensive. So, and I told him, dude, I am going to keep guessing until you actually release it. So it's going to be fun. If you want, email your guesses in reference to who do you like to see at Four State from Troma. Would you like to see Lloyd Kaufman there? That would be a great, if it is, Matt, dear God, if you are able to get Lloyd Kaufman to show up at Four State, that would be a hell of a freaking interview for me. It would be a big time to get him speaking. He'll be one of, although we spoke to, I want to get, he's one of the people that I would love to have on the show for a little while and speak with. I seriously doubt he's going to get Lloyd there, but still, I would love to see Mr. Kaufman at a four-state event. Just as much I would like to see Johnny Johnson at a four-state event, because Johnny is a nice guy. Johnny is a workforce, period. He shells out a lot of content. I don't know if he's done with his seventh guest series yet. He's done a lot of work. I would love to interview Johnny. Johnny, if you're listening to this, please, let's set up a type of schedule and get talk about movies and your work. I would love to have you on the show and everything else, because you know how big of a fan. If you guys don't, and gals don't know, he's currently doing something with the classic monster stuff. I should start to share his research into the classic monsters, like Wolfman or the werewolf aspect of movies, the mummy aspect of movies, the Dracula aspect of movies. He's been doing research and live streams on Facebook in regards to this. I should start sharing them to our page, because he poses questions, he does a lot of research. So there's that. I would love to see him at one of these shows, Hawking and stuff. He was at, from what I was told from Big Candy, that he was at the Monster Mania, I think it was like the 20th anniversary, at the Alamo's, Steakhouse in Winchester, which I was not able to go. I wish I was able to go. They had a couple of, I don't know if I mentioned this on any of the previous podcasts, that I wasn't able to go. I was kicking myself for not being able to go. Just thankfully, Big Kenny, in midst of my anger of not getting to go, got me a mini poster that they were giving out, and he had it signed by three of the actors, two of the actors and one of the actresses that showed up for a Q&A. So I went from being angry that I couldn't go and not having the funds to go to sulk mode. it was like, how I couldn't make it. You could have just, that was my response to Big Candy. It's like, how dare you? You could have come up. I was taking off that night. How dare you go? How dare you? I could have bought a ticket and went and seen these fine folks and got stuff signed. He was like, I got this stuff, this thing for you. It's signed. And I went, I can't be mad at you no more. I'm going to sulk. But it was just, it's one of my guilty pleasure movies. I'm glad to see it's on Hulu. That's it for about now. There is definitely more to say. I don't want, I have to see the Inhumans, show that just popped up on Hulu. A lot of shows are premiering this. We're starting to get into the fall season, which means I might be pulling back of me trying to play Destiny to get caught up with Gotham, which I hear has been showing not really ultra low ratings, but extremely low ratings than they expected, which might mean next season it is in a iffy state right now, which means we might not see a season 4. We might not see a season 5 in reference to Gotham. Some of you might be cheering in regards to that, and some of you might be actually disappointed. Inhumans, like I said, if you guys have been following us on Facebook, again, facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast, you would have seen an article shared by me stating that the season has not even, it has officially begun, but we will not be getting a season 2, because the season has been promptly canceled after, I think, 13 episodes, which is the entire season for Inhumans, which is kind of funny. But we are also, oddly enough, ABC, Disney wants to keep Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because apparently last season was a better, stronger season. So they want, I guess they want to see how season 4 goes right now, before making an official decision. So, that should prove interesting and see how things go. Right now, I think Hulu, despite their funky, pissy, pathetic, ironically clunky, insert other negative, vulgar adjectives here for their user interface for Hulu, that is not their only, a problem right now, because a lot of stuff is not showing up on Hulu, i.e. I don't see The Simpsons normally. I don't know if The Simpsons will be coming back as a Fox show on Hulu. A lot of stuff seems to be hidden or gone from Hulu, despite the fact that CBS doesn't include their shows on. They include shows on for their CBS channel, but not current shows. Not this season's over and done with. But there's that. I would loved to have caught Star Trek Discovery, and the thing is, I think we're about two, three episodes into Star Trek Discovery. But from what I heard and from what I initially tried to look at, Star Trek Discovery has been relatively, I've been hearing both good and bad, but where a lot of people have been bitching about it is that the first two episodes premiered on TV as the first two episodes, but after the second episode dropped, which was in essence the second episode, which was like, you have premiere episode part one, then you have episode two, which is part two of whatever part one was. They told everybody, you can watch the remaining season of Star Trek Discovery on the CBS website or your CBS All Access app, and it's going to be like a $10 fee with commercials. Now, as someone who's clipped the cord, I will say this. I spend $20 a month on pay services. $10 for Hulu and $10 for Netflix. And it's worth it. Despite the seemingly jumping of ship that is Hulu, it is overall worth having Hulu and Netflix to cover basis along with YouTube, to warrant $10 for a CBS app. Now, a lot of apps out there, if you're choosing to cut your cord, Hulu and Netflix are your best choices. Or Hulu, Netflix, and Amazon are your best choices, because Amazon does offer a monthly fee for their streaming. To cover your bases, let's say each one's $10 a month, it is worth the $30 to hedge your bets and cover everything. Meaning, if Hulu doesn't have it, Amazon will have it. If Amazon doesn't have it, good chance Netflix doesn't have it. And vice versa. And between all that, let's say you just want to keep it to two. Hulu and Netflix. Both have a great aspect of things. I'm not down with the live TV aspect of Hulu. I'm not that big of a sports guy like Big Candy to warrant the streaming of the sports, or the YouTube streaming, or the fact that in order to have the streaming aspect of either YouTube or the YouTube Live to catch live TV or live TV on Hulu, the $30+ a month. No, I'm not paying $30 a month for stuff that is seemingly jumping ship. No. Or the fact that everywhere else on YouTube will have this live TV, but my area. So I'm not putting $30 down a month for something that may be iffy. No. $10 a piece, yes. But a lot of people are like, well, I pay. Yeah, if you want to watch The Walking Dead, you got to shell out another $20 for $10 for, in essence, one channel that you're going to be watching. Or two channels you'll be watching one thing on once a week. No. For someone like myself, I'll pay, let's say, $20 a month. That's $240 a year. Add another $40 for something like Walking Dead if I don't want to see it live on a weekly basis. That's $300 a year. Let's say $280 a year. Let's see here. $280 a year divided by 12. Let's see, clear all. Let's bring up the calculator, see what that comes to. So that $280 divided by 12 equals $23.33 a month for to watch, let's say, Walking Dead and Netflix, to season pass Walking Dead, Netflix, and Hulu. Okay, let's do this. Let's say, because I am a fan of Doctor Who. And maybe the next hostful or next solo cast, I'll be bitching about Doctor Who. Let's do up at another $40, $320 for the year. Divide that by 12 equals $26.67 a month over the course of the year versus $34-$40 a month for bare bones basic cable or basic dish service. So in essence, I'm saving like $14 a month, and I have everything I could want. I know that Hulu has HBO part of their package now. I think Encore was not working right for them, but that's an option available for me. But I'm not a big watcher of HBO, but after uploading this episode, I would probably want to catch a few of the shows before the free weekend is over with. And there's a few things I want to watch, including I want to see, once again, the Suicide Squad, because I don't have that on digital on demand yet because of my income. Again, I'm going to end it there. It's about an hour and 18 minutes. Post is up. It is now officially Monday morning, almost 1 a.m. I got to upload this up for you guys, and please listen. If you have an opinion in reference to the passing of Hugh Hefner, especially if you're a photographer or a model, please email us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com and tell us your opinion. If you have thoughts in reference to Stephen King's It, please do this as well. Or your thoughts on Destiny. If you really think, if you're a real diehard fanboy and you want to tell me I am wrong, that you are right, please do so. Again, the email is longcoatmafia@gmail.com. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. As always, all our episodes going back to the beginning is on our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. You can also find and subscribe to us on iTunes/Google Play Music, whichever you so favorably use. Or, if you want, Google Play Music. Or if you also want Stitcher Radio. So either way, you can find us there. Plus, we're on Twitter. You can stalk us on Twitter by using our handle, which is Long Coat Mafia. Our Instagram, we do occasionally post there as well. That handle is also Long Coat Mafia, so you can feel free to stalk us on social media. So, then again, I'm out about an hour and a half into an hour 20, so take care. Have a good week. See you next week. It is October. I must add before we go that since October is generally Breast Cancer Awareness Month, whether you're a guy or a gal and you have breasts, please get them checked and do them checked, especially guys. It's coming to knowledge that guys also do tend to get breast cancer. So if you feel a lump or so forth and so on, please check a doctor. Have your breasts checked, especially if you're a woman. I'm not being sexist. Again, it's breast cancer. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Please, no matter who you are, please get them checked. And, you know, donate to Buy Pink, or I think what it is, Buy Pink for Breast Cancer Awareness. Donate to your favorite charities that help with breast cancer research. What else? It's also later this month. Might be a little bit more. If I can't get with my co-host for Hostful, it might be a little bit more creepypasta heavy this month because it is October and that means more horror stuff for you guys. And I know some of you are going, yay. So, but later this month, I think I'll be recording something with Don Ramirez and his documentary, award-winning documentary film, called Trailer Trash. Hopefully I'll post something. That particular episode might be a little bit funky audio, but still, I'm prepared for that. Let's see, what else? Let's see how good I can do this month without you resorting to an old Electric Eye episode, folks. If you also like to be a part of our show, please email me at lonecoatmafia@gmail.com and we'll see what we can work out. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
See you next time on the Long Coat Mafia.